Welcome to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And here we are. It's the dog days, Cindy.
Uh-huh.
You're laughing at me because I said it's the dog days?
Yes. Actually, it's summertime, height of summer, height of fruit.
I think even dogs like what we have to talk about.
Okay. I think they probably do.
You said that we're in the middle of summer. I'm out of stuff to talk about. I said, ice cream.
Yes.
Right?
That's a good thing to talk about.
I think about.
Brings back lots of good memories from childhood.
In summertime, sun's starting to go down, and there was an ice cream shop in my neighborhood, and we could walk up, you know, to sort of like the big avenue and walk down the big avenue.
That's fun.
And go in, and it was a Baskin-Robbins, so they had, of course, 31 flavors.
Yay.
So you could walk in there, and it was really fun to eat the ice cream, but the looking and the reading the names and the imagining.
And did you get to taste, too, or no? Or did you not do that?
There was not a lot of... was packed.
Oh, yeah. They were busy,
I bet. It was packed, and it was always a summer thing. It wasn't like, oh, it's November, let's walk up and get ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, it's March, and we ride my bike in the mud and go get ice cream. But in the middle of summer, that was kind of the coolest. You know, you save the paper route money and...
There you go.
You know, you had a...
And go get a cone.
Yeah, you grab your little brother and you roll up there. And but I swear half the pleasure was the looking and the imagining and...
Sure.
I mean, I certainly ate it plenty greedy. Lord knows.
You didn't savor it once
you had
it?
And you think about it. I was always a cone guy.
Okay.
And you think about...
But which kind of cone?
Not those...
Didn't they have the choices?
I never can get straight.
Yeah, I don't
know. We have really interesting interviews coming up with people who are committed to ice cream in our second and third segments.
Mm-hmm.
One from an ice cream shop here in Baltimore, David from the Charmery, and then also Jenny of Jenny's Ice Cream in Columbus, Ohio, and a few other places around the country now who are super high quality. So maybe they can actually solve what the names of the darn cones are for me, okay? I think the sugar cone, what I think of is like a normal waffle-looking thing, but not the big one, waffle filled with air sort of cup thing. That's the one that I always liked. And half the thing for me was, what order did you put? If you got two scoops, what order did you put the scoops on top of each other? Did you want like the butterscotchy one melting on the chocolate one?
What was the right progression?
Or did
progression?
You want the, well, it really depends.
I never got more than one scoop, so I didn't ever have to think about that.
I always liked nuts, and my brother always looked at me like I was crazy. I always wanted Jamocha almond fudge, but I wanted that melting onto pralines and cream, and the pralines and cream was definitely like a kid trying to pull himself into diabetic shock. That was the sweetest ice cream that they made.
Hmm.
But that the fudge like dripping on that stuff as it kind of melted, even trying to eat it fast.
Right.
You know, that was my most often combo.
Yeah, that's pretty cool to have an ice cream parlor right up the street from your house growing up.
But it's funny, but like it was only like it's like now. It's like the hot part of the year and sun's just starting to go down. And you're starting to think that, you know what, school is coming. We better enjoy this. So right. What do? You go get ice cream.
Okay. Well, we used to have an ice cream truck that came through our neighborhood. And, wow, I just used to love the sound of that.
To have the bells?
Yeah. That was always so much fun. This was when I lived in Indiana. And we lived in a pretty good-sized neighborhood when I was little. And, you know, we would all run out on our bikes and chase the guy and catch up with him if we were out in the neighborhood when he was around, or if you were in your house, you came flying out your front door down through the lawn and went after the ice cream. I always liked the one that he had. This was an ice cream, actually. I'm sorry, it's a popsicle, but it was the red, white, and blue one. Oh my gosh, that was my favorite.
That's not ice cream.
I know, but it was still fun and a memory. So
I do recall once in a while a truck like that would come around. And the first thing you start scrambling, you hear the bells, you start scrambling for money.
For change, yeah. Where's the change? Where are the coins? Mom, can I have a quarter?
Start flipping over seat cushions in the living room.
Yeah.
So popsicle, really? And not ice cream?
I always loved that thing. Well, we always had ice cream at home, so I was never lacking in ice cream at home. You know, I could have ice cream whenever I wanted it. So
wow.
That was my parents. My mom always made sure we had dessert
now
after dinner.
Now I feel bad
dinner.
About my whole childhood.
Well, you really shouldn't, Tony. I don't think that you should base your feelings on your childhood.
I could have ice cream whenever I wanted.
Yeah, I could, pretty much. Yeah, I guess I was spoiled. I don't know. Or else my dad really liked ice cream, so maybe that's why we had ice cream in the house at all times. And we were chocolate sauce people. So, and then there was some other thing that came in a jar when I was little. I want to say it was butterscotch sauce or something.
Excuse me.
Yes.
The Wolves, they were the chocolate sauce people?
Yes. The Wolves were. Warm.
Sorry.
My mom would call it hot fudge. I think our mom made it, maybe. And so we would have hot fudge on our vanilla ice cream. And then, I remember when Breyers had the vanilla bean ice cream. That was a big deal.
Oh,
that was really expensive. It was very special. And it had those flecks in it. Yum. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, we didn't have all the things that we have now then. So
my great-grandmother, who... She was the ice cream person for me.
My
grandmother loved it, but it's because of her mother. And her mother had grown up in rural, it's hard to say, not say rural.
Rural
North Carolina.
Yes.
And ice cream was a want, like she had to move to the big city for it to like be available somewhere on a special occasion, you know, to go to some fancy dining room and have ice cream actually offered.
Okay.
Maybe, you know, we're probably talking about like the 20s is when she first had ice cream.
So they made their own, didn't they?
Loved it.
No?
They did not make their own.
Hmm.
And she always would go get, man, she loved the fact that she could go to a grocery store and buy ice cream. She could pick the ice cream she wanted. There wasn't just one flavor. And she could have it in her freezer. And at the end of every night before going to bed, she would have a bowl of ice cream. That was her like... The world has advanced.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
This is life.
You can get ice cream anywhere. Well, speaking of grandparents, my grandfather was a huge ice cream lover, and he had a hand crank machine. And that was part of going to visit them in York in the summertime, was granddaddy would make blueberry ice cream or strawberry. I think he really liked strawberry, actually. He also made his own root beer, by the way, which I thought was pretty cool. But and he drank Pepsi, but he would call it Peps. And we would drink it out of Dixie cups. It was like our treat. You would go get a Dixie cup. You would get one of those ice cubes out of the freezer. They had a really old refrigerator. And they had those trays that the ice cubes popped out of those little cups. Okay, so you got one popped out cube. You got your Peps. And then meanwhile, you started making the ice cream. And even in the wintertime, we had ice cream, Tony. Do you know how? My grandfather would make snow ice cream. I loved that when I was a kid, that he would make snow ice cream.
That's awesome.
It was just one of the greatest. I mean, those are great memories. Those are memories that I'm sure we all cherish of our families and the special times growing up, whether it was your grandfather actually making hand crank ice cream with rock salt and, you know, ice cubes around it, and he went out back and turned it, or, you know, whatever your personal memories are. I'm sure they're all great.
I think that the thing that strikes me is sort of the thing I started with is when you go and you see that case and you have all those flavors, it's like a little funny vacation. It's like, wait a minute, there's so many wonderful things that can happen. And ice cream is such a strong association, I think, because of that kind of experience.
Mm-hmm.
And for my great-grandmother, like the world has advanced, you know? And your memory of like, we can do this by hand and it's going to be marvelous. And you know, your grandmother probably picked the blueberries that went into the ice cream that your granddad was cranking out.
Yeah, that's for sure. Or they were growing in the backyard. Yeah, well, they had a pretty good garden in the back, so it was usually something from the back. But I mean, they lived in the middle of tons of farmland, so all they had to do was go, you know, two steps away and they were going to get, or their neighbor next door. You know, everybody had their gardens, which was left over from World War II, frankly. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, when you think about, my grandfather was born in 1900, so he was not a child of the Depression. He was an adult with children during the Great Depression. So, you know, they were just used to living in a very simple way and doing things for themselves. And my grandmother always brought in fresh fruit in the summertime to can, to preserve, to freeze later on in her life as a freezer came about. And, you know, she always made sure she had things put up. They had a cellar. They had a real root cellar at their house. So, and I was never allowed to go down there. I never saw it in my whole life. My biggest goal was to go up in the attic or go down to the cellar in their house. They were like the two mystery places. And my grandparents always lived in the same house their whole married life. And so those are great memories. But yes, and I think, you know, one of the other things about ice cream is that when you think about the history of it, it is something that has been made for thousands of years. And it all starts from snow in a mountain top, you know, at a warm time of the year, that, you know, obviously these were kings and queens or leaders of countries or very, very wealthy people that were able to pull this, you know, snow through, you know, a whole line of animals that would quickly transport it to the place where they wanted to eat it. And
it's
then
the
they would,
dog days of August in the Roman Empire.
In Iran or wherever.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. It is
so
exactly
it's
true.
It's the exact same thing.
It does. And, you know, I just made saffron ice cream yesterday. I made saffron, nectarine, brown sugar, and creme fraiche ice cream. And one of the things I was reading in the history of ice cream is that is one, ice saffron was one of the first, you know, probably ice creams made that is so important, which
saffron
is interesting.
Saffron is such a cool perfume
and,
in
oh
ice
God,
cream.
Oh, my God. It makes the most beautiful ice cream, and I, because my brother-in-law is from Iran, I've had Iranian ice cream, saffron ice cream, and it's really is. It's a beautiful thing. Also, rose water was used in their ice cream making, and it's very ancient. You know, it's very old. These tastes and these perfumes that were used to make ice cream,
Any other surprising bits and pieces of history?
I think that's really it. You know, there's not that much. I mean, I'd like to hear what the people that are in the business of making ice cream know about the history of ice cream. But, I mean, what I looked at, I will admit relatively quickly, was, you know, it just starts with snow, you know, and you need some sort of salt and ice to pack around the dairy product, and then you freeze it.
A couple of quick personal questions.
Oh, gosh. No, I'm not answering any personal questions. All right, yes.
Vanilla or chocolate?
Oh, vanilla.
Okay.
And I like
that's
that other kind of cone. Not that waffly-looking
one. You want the air one?
I want the air one. Ah. Oh, my gosh. I'll tell you what.
Air cone.
Okay, this is how much we like the air cones in my family. My mom used to buy boxes of the air cones when I was really little, and I would go and eat just the air cone without any ice cream.
Of course.
That's how much I like those things.
It's like toast with sugar on it.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay. Nuts or no nuts?
Oh, no nuts. No way. Mm. I don't even like nuts in my cookies unless it's a peanut butter cookie.
And ice cream with other things, like baked things in it?
No, but I will admit that I really,
You're going to struggle. You're going to struggle with the interview with Jenny's.
I'm here with Jay Miller. I have a feeling that if Jay Miller was here, he might say one of his favorite desserts is vanilla ice cream with hot chocolate on it.
It is, although Jay's all-time favorite dessert, I know for a fact. Is a coffee ice cream with coffee sauce dessert.
Okay. Well, that's a double whammy.
Yeah.
Wait, does he have coffee on the side as well?
He has it with coffee.
I wish he was here right now.
He has it with an espresso.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
But yeah, I definitely like, the only adornment to my ice cream is hot chocolate sauce.
All right, Cindy, last personal, highly technical question. Favorite flavor?
It is dulce de leche. There's no question. I used to work for an Argentine chef when I was much younger, and then you and I went to Argentina in 2000 and had one of their dulce de leche ice creams at a shop called Fredo, and I will never forget that as long as I live. It was one of the most delicious things I've ever put in my mouth. And the first time I ever had gelato, I went to Europe on a backpacking trip in 1985. And I had a creme, I think it was called flan ice cream, gelato. It was unbelievable.
Flan gelato.
Yeah. It was so,
sort of funny to say.
So good. How about you, Tony?
In gelato, it's easy. It's always hazelnut. When in Italy, it's always hazelnut. Just straight ice cream. It may be pistachio.
Okay.
It may be in pistachio, like with big roasted chunks of like salty pistachios and maybe in a little bit of caramel, a little bit of honey or something like that. But it just might be pistachio.
Definitely when I was a kid, it was bubblegum ice cream.
Of course it was.
I loved bubblegum. I was so excited when we went into the shop and they would have that. That was definitely my favorite.
We have a couple of really interesting guests who have some pretty outlandish ideas then for a purist like you to hear. Because I know that, we'll get into it, but I know that David's pretty famous for using all kinds of historically Baltimore important ingredients
in his
great stuff.
That's cool.
And that Jenny, part of her history is she started as a pastry chef and then started taking bits and pieces of French pastry and working them into ice cream. Which you know very well is close to my heart because I'm always trying to get.
Yeah, you're always.
We have really talented pastry chefs and I'm like, why don't you take all those chocolate croissants, you know, soak them in this and then spin them into blah, blah, blah. And so. Anyway, we'll get into those two interviews and And no more personal ice cream questions for you, Cindy.
Thank goodness. That was almost traumatic.
Almost. Ice cream's never traumatic. Ice cream is only happy stuff.
It is happy.
All of that and more on Formula Wolf on Food & Wine on WYPR. Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And with us, we have the becoming famous now, right? Jenny Brittenbauer of Jenny's Ice Cream in Columbus, Ohio.
That's awesome.
So, hey, guys.
Hey, how are you?
Great. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you.
So maybe take a minute and give people an idea of your, like, one-minute life story. And then, most importantly, because this program is all about the happy stuff in life, ice cream necessarily. you know, what in the world got you going in that direction?
Well, so it is my life story, actually, because I'm 41 years old. I started my first ice cream business when I was 21. So it really is about, you know, almost half my life ago that I sort of jumped on this journey of making ice cream and eating ice cream every day. And so I really do feel like I sort of grew up in a way. As an ice cream entrepreneur and ice cream maker in the kitchen making ice cream and in the farms and so on. So I started making ice cream because I was going to art school, working in a French pastry shop, and not sure what I was going to do with my life. So I started making perfumes, and I thought, well, maybe I'll be a perfumer. One day I took my essential oil and mixed it into ice cream to make an edible perfume because as a perfumer, you use fats that melt at body temperature to sort of suspend the oil, and then it melts right on your skin and releases the oil. Well, butterfat melts at body temperature actually 2 degrees below body temperature, and so it was the perfect carrier for scent, and so I started making edible perfumes using ice cream.
That's cool.
Well, then I started to reach into my pastry, what I knew about working in the kitchen and pastry and making ice creams myself, and I quit everything after that. I knew it was going to be my life. I walked out of art class. My last art class, went home, made ice cream, and 6 months later, I started my first ice cream business in an indoor public market that was a 150-year-old public market here in Columbus. Started working with the merchants there in the market and making ice creams out of the things that they carried, fresh strawberries and basil and all of the wonderful bounty of the farmer's market. And you know, 20 years later, that was 1996. Now I have 22, 23 stores in many cities, and we're doing a wholesale and grocer, and we have this wonderful website where you can buy our ice cream.
That's great.
And so on.
Good for you. Congratulations.
Yeah. Having been lucky enough to try your ice cream in one of your shops in Columbus and then also in Nashville, then I was really shocked to find it at Whole Foods, and the three magic words were almond butter brittle.
Yum.
Oh, yes. Yeah, brown butter almond brittle.
There you go.
Okay, yeah. So I completely messed it up.
Too many words.
Yeah, that's I kind of turned
into. In the old days, they just had very quick names, and we should get back to that maybe.
Number 14. Sort of like the Chinese menu in the old days.
Brown butter. Just the words brown butter sounds really good to me.
The trying a lot of your stuff, it just you can tell it's someone who's a really good cook, who wants to make really good ice cream, is doing this stuff. How do you make the stuff that you do, and how in growing the business, how do you make the stuff that you do as quality-oriented in different volumes?
Well, actually, you know what I've learned about producing, you know, as a producer of edibles, of ice cream, we actually can get better as we grow because when I was just, you know, it was just me in the market and as we were just, you know, a much smaller company, we were very reliant on what was available there. And even the farmers were sort of like, you know, yeah, you can have a flat of strawberries, but they don't give you, you know, they're not that excited about it because they want to sell it to their customers. And, you know, and then beyond that, it's like, well, whatever spice and whatever, you know, the spice merchant gets in or the distributor truck will bring you. Whereas now we can go directly to the source. We are not just buying strawberries from our farmer, but we're growing three different kinds of strawberries that sort of roll into the season. Gives us 3 or 4 weeks during strawberry season to process them. They're these really, you know, grown for flavor strawberries. They're grown close to our kitchen. We take the same approach to vanilla beans, and so we work with a vanilla bean grower in Uganda. Her name's Lulu Sturdy. Huge crush on her. She's amazing, and her vanilla beans are amazing, but we are the only importers of them in the United States. And so she reserves these really special ones for us. They're covered in white crystal. They're like the perfect vanilla beans. And I don't know anyone, not even any chefs, who have access to these, to like these kinds of vanilla beans. So we get a lot more freedom to make much better ice cream as we grow. The same is true about the dairy farms. I mean, you know, when we first started, it was impossible. I actually thought I could walk up to any dairy and find milk and cream, which is absolutely impossible. You know, you can go to the farmer's market and find 16 apples from 16 different orchards, and it's awesome, but you cannot find dairy from 16 different dairies, or, you know, the dairy business is all commingled with commodity milk, and it's really hard to separate it if you're not going through 5,000 gallons of it and fill up a whole tanker truck. And so as we've been able to grow, we've built demand for grass-pastured in Ohio, and so we're supporting those farmers and paying a little more for the milk that they are producing. And anyway, it's a whole big, beautiful system that we can think of it as a journey that we're on. I mean, you know, 5 years from now, the milk that we're getting, the cream we're getting, is even going to be better, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But
That's...
we can make those changes as we grow, and we could never have done that as a small company.
Right, because you can really support those farmers. That's great.
So how many gallons of dairy are you using in when you started, when you opened in 96? How many gallons of dairy would you buy in a week, and how many gallons of dairy are you buying now?
Oh, in 1996, I probably bought, you know, maybe 10 gallons of dairy in a week. I mean, you know, that nobody, I really built this one scoop at a time. People didn't really want basil ice cream in 1996, so it was like I would have days where I would sell one or two ice cream cones. Fortunately, not too many of those days, but yeah, I was, you know, very slow. So now, I mean, I don't know how much we're doing in a week, but it's hundreds of thousands a year. I mean, it's a lot, quite a lot.
We did a program recently on hits and flops from chefs. So Cindy, I'll let
menu
you
items.
Ask. Yeah.
Yeah. What are some of your favorite things that you've done, and some things that you were excited about but realized it's not really selling very well, which we've all done as chefs.
Or you taste it and it's like, I thinking?
That's not working out.
there have been so many, of course, because there are things that I think are really great that are going to work really well, mm-hmm. and then they kind of fall flat, you know, for people, which is part of the fun.
Sure.
Actually, you know, I don't wait till it's, you know, super R&D'd and we get it perfect or whatever. I mean, I think it's perfect when we put it out, but we don't go and, like, you know, focus group anything or whatever. You know, our mm-hmm. focus groups are really our customers, and so we'll make it and put it out there and then listen to what people say over the counter and then online, and it's so much fun, you know, because we'll project, you know, something's going to sell and something else won't, and it'll be flopped or flip-flopped. So, I don't know, one time I did I loved it. It was a caramelized honey and cumin. It was like a honey butterscotch and cumin flavor, which was
it's the
so
cumin thing
addictive.
Yeah, I bet.
To me.
Yeah.
And nobody really cared for it. In the same collection, which was hilarious, the whole collection was hilarious anyway, because it was dark holiday. So it was a holiday collection, which was a ridiculous thing to do, but whatever, it was, I was younger then. And it was like the depressing holiday, you know, the depressing version. So we had like, you know, black paper chains in our stores. And I mean, it was just really obnoxious and stupid. But So cumin honey butterscotch was one of those flavors. It was meant to sort of evoke the, you know, time and whatever. And the other one was cedarwood vanilla. And I thought, well, nobody's going to want cedarwood ice cream, but let's try it. And I loved it. It tasted like sort of like a beautiful cashmere sort of scent. I don't know if cashmere has a scent, but smell the way cashmere feels or something.
Wow.
And I just didn't think people would like it. Well, people really went for that one and not the cumin. People love the cedarwood. It also had one of my favorite ingredients called Peru balsam. In it, which is it smells like pipe smoke, and it's from Ecuador.
Wow.
It's a bark, and I love it. Anyway, people really love that one.
Very good. That's exciting.
Yeah.
Well, that's the fun part of what we do, you know, that's that. And you started off as an artist, so you have a creative mind, and there's your outlet. That's pretty great.
And you just go for it, obviously. And
yeah,
you're not afraid of getting feedback about the aroma of cumin's effect on people when they smell sweet things.
I love it when people have very strong opinions. I mean, one time we did Lapsang Souchong, which is a very smoky tea with Armagnac prunes. Beautiful ice cream, but it tasted like you ate a campfire. And so, I mean, it was just way too much. We just overdid it on the Lapsang Souchong. But there are two people still to this day who only want to eat that flavor.
Huh.
And then the rest of everyone was just, I mean, and I, you know, when even when I ate it, it was just like you have smoke breath for like an hour afterward. I mean, it was horrible.
That's
how do you
but
do your
two people?
How do you do your development? Do you have kitchens there, and you go down and talk to people, or you know, not necessarily go down there, but you know, you walk over there and you talk about this is the idea, and you guys put it together and make a couple of gallons or what? How does it work? How does that development process work for you?
Yeah, it's I have a test kitchen right here, right next to where I'm sitting, actually, and we're in it all the time. We have a chef, a research chef, Olivia. She's in there every day, all the time, and we're in there constantly making new flavors, new sundaes, new sauces. You know, experimenting with ingredients and eating a lot of ice cream.
So
we do about a half gallon. Our development process often starts. I mean, it's about a 16-week process, but. We can do it much faster than that. We're just kind of, you know, just we know that we should start about 16 weeks away from when we want it to be in a store.
That's cool. Tony and I were talking about our ice cream stories from when we were children. What ice cream stories? What, you know, sort of we were both talking about our grandparents. My grandfather was born in the early 1900s and used to make his own hand crank ice cream. Do you have any stories like that that you'd care to share with us?
Well, I will just say that I never liked my grandparents' ice cream.
Oh,
so I'm one
gosh.
Of those people that I never liked homemade ice cream.
Wow.
Everybody, you know, went gaga over it, and I always thought it was too icy or, you know, it wasn't frozen. And we had a Häagen-Dazs in Peoria, Illinois, and I loved Häagen-Dazs. Like, that was my thing. And I was like, and even to this day, I say, like, if you can't make better ice cream than Häagen-Dazs, go home. Like, the, you know. You know. So anyway, that was my thing. But we always had ice cream at night. That was our thing. And also with my grandparents. My grandmother always had some strawberry freezer jam. And so that was how I ate ice cream, is vanilla ice cream with strawberry freezer jam. Almost every night I spent a lot of time with them. And before bed was when we ate ice cream.
Yeah, sounds good.
Did you have?
I don't think I'd let my kids do now, but that was how we did it. Back in the day when you could just eat the whole candy jar and like, you know, eat ice cream before bed. I mean, I don't know. We just don't do those things.
But you had
now.
To wait. But you had to wait 30 minutes before you could go swimming after eating, though, right?
Yes. Oh yeah, for sure. Uh-huh.
All right.
So here you get to be a critic for a second. What is the worst ice cream you've ever tasted, and what was the best ice cream you've ever tasted? It can't be stuff that you made.
Oh, it can't be anything I made.
Nope. If you want to throw yourself under the bus, climb right under there. But
well, I was going to say, yeah. I mean. The worst ice cream award goes to me because I made a smoked banana one time, but I like used this industrial smoker. My friend has a restaurant with this big giant smoker, and they were only in there for 10 minutes. But by the time I got back to my kitchen, they had turned into like formaldehyde.
Yeah, putting bananas in a beef pit, that's tough.
Yeah, I mean, they're so good when you do it right and you just serve it with ice cream. But anyway, the ice cream ended up tasting like formaldehyde. It was not a good thing. We still made it, of course. But anyway, so that definitely doesn't need to happen ever again. We didn't serve it. We just threw it out.
I think we then better, since you've thrown yourself under the bus, we need to give you credit for your best ice cream then, because that was a good story.
Oh gosh. I don't know. I mean, I'm a huge fan of our yogurts. Those are like, I just think that those are so good. And sometimes I'll do like a chestnut whole milk yogurt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but which I love. I just think, and it's just got the best texture. I just love that, especially in the holidays or whatever.
Sounds good.
You know, the funny thing about yogurt is that nobody wants yogurt ice cream. Like in our thing, they just don't buy yogurt. They think it's healthy, and I'm always like, no, our yogurt is not healthy. I have to remind people, please, it's real yogurt. It's biodynamic, beautiful yogurt. But they come in for the calories in our shop. So
there you go.
People don't, they don't want it. But anyway, I think that's my favorite ice cream I've ever had, is that chestnut and whole milk yogurt.
That sounds good.
So that yogurt is your favorite ice cream you ever had?
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it's actually made with a lot of cream and a lot of dairy fat, you know, so it's a very, very rich experience, but it has that like, you know, that slight tang of yogurt, and then the sweet chestnut, kind of honey.
It does sound pretty terrific.
It's beautiful. You know, the other thing that I've made, and I can't make it on a large scale, is hickory nut. You can't get hickories out of the shell, so there's no way to make hickory ice cream. I mean, I'd love to do it. I've even thought about planting my own hickory nut groves, you know, because it takes 10 years to get nuts from them. So it's like a long-term thing.
Right.
But hickory nuts are beautiful. They're almost like, they're like pecans, but like more maple-y.
Okay.
It does sound a little bit like the impossible dream. You got to get 10 years to figure out if it's going to work out.
Yeah.
But do it. You should do it.
I know, right? Doesn't that sound like so much fun?
It does.
It does. Is anything else about what you all are doing or what you do or what your future plan is that people should know about?
Oh, gosh. I mean, we're just trucking forward, trying to figure out, you know, the best way to make ice cream. And, it's all about getting better every day because, you know, I have this vision of what my ice cream should be like, and we're not there yet. I think we're a few years away from that, actually. So that's what it's all about for me, is, like, making the ice cream that I dreamt about in 1996 in terms of texture and body. And that's where I spend most of my time, and most of my real work is on making it have the perfect buttercream texture and, you know, bouncy, beautiful body. And that's something that's the hardest thing to achieve in ice cream, and I'm kind of on that train.
Sounds good. Good goal.
Very cool to talk with you.
Yeah, thank you.
You're talking to two pretty fussy people, and I think we'd all get along just fine.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. Well, all the best to you. My goodness.
Well, to you guys, too. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely.
Good luck with what you're
nice
doing, and I can't wait to walk into one of your shops again.
Thanks, Jenny.
Oh, I can't wait to see you. Take care.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So, Cindy, you in the mood to try a little bit of Jenny's ice cream?
Definitely.
Now?
I'm extremely excited. That sounds like she's making a great product.
When we come back on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine, we'll have another interview with a local ice cream maker that does really high-quality stuff at his shop, The Charmery. Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we have with us today for our final segment, David Alima.
Hi.
Hey, David.
How
glad you're
doing?
Here.
Happy to be here.
And David has an ice cream shop, since we're in the fantasy world of talking about ice cream for the entire hour and thinking about ice cream and fantasizing about ice cream. He has an ice cream shop on 36th Street in Hamden called The Charmery.
Correct.
Like the name. That's
Thank
awesome.
Thank you so much.
Good deal.
So you're a Baltimore guy. We had Jenny, who's become like almost like a national figure for
the Ben and Jerry's of the new age.
Yeah. Well, yeah, maybe.
Getting there.
Yes, I'm certain that you're more correct than I am thinking about it, because you're the ice cream guy. So what are you trying to do at your shop?
Yeah, I mean, I want, when my wife and I opened our shop, we wanted it that it could literally only exist in Baltimore City. We grew up in Baltimore. She grew up in Columbia, but we both spent a lot of time in Baltimore. And I love it here, and I wanted the shop to kind of like, from local art on the walls to local ingredients to kind of flavors that only people from Baltimore would like get, you know?
Or not be horrified by.
Not be horrified by. That's a good way to say it.
The funny thing is that some of those flavors, I've heard people say, I tried it because it sounded just horrific, but I can't not get it every time I go to the shop.
So what are some of these flavors?
Well, we do lemon stick, for example, which is the take on the half a lemon with peppermint stick.
Mm-hmm.
We use our cookies and cream is with burger cookies.
Oh, yeah.
We
wow.
do. We do an
awesome.
And then kind of one of the classics that we've kind of been known for is we do a Old Bay caramel.
Wow.
So yeah. I did a lot of kind of takes on Old Bay ice cream, and they were all terrible. They're dark chocolate.
I believe you.
Yeah, thank you.
I believe you.
Like dark chocolate with Old Bay is an awful combination.
Oh, yeah.
It kept being too salty, and then my mind just went to salty caramel, and we kind of experimented with that, and it's a really, I love it. It's a beautiful little balance. And
that's one of those things that I've heard three different people say. They got it out of curiosity, expecting to throw it away and order something else. And it's what they order every single time they go to the shop now.
I expected it would be like a big taster, but not a big seller. But it does great for us. It's one of our top sellers.
About how many different things do you all offer at a given time?
Well, we have 16 spots in our dipping cabinet, of which one is always dedicated to vegan, dairy-free flavor. And we also do lime brickies and specialty shakes. And we have a keg of Dominion root beer that we do root beer floats from. But 16 is kind of like what we is like the dipping cabinet.
And is there runaway favorite? Is there always this number one, number two? Or
there's about four or five flavors that will remain constant in our dipping cabinet at most times. Vanilla. You know, you gotta have a vanilla. We don't have a chocolate. We do a Maryland Mud, which has Oreo dust and Oreo pieces and chocolate chips, and that's kind of if that's the one where like if we don't have it in, we're in trouble. So we try to always have that. We do a pistachio toffee that's often there. The salty caramel, the Old Bay caramel.
You started to tell your story. So you and your wife are from this area, mm-hmm. and how did you decide to open the shop then?
Well, she's had dreams of when she was very young, she wanted to open a peanut butter factory. Basically, she went to school for restaurant management and kind of built her career up to that. She was a manager at a great restaurant, the Old Ebbets Grill in D.C. And I stumbled upon an ice cream maker about 15 years ago and just started making ice cream. And I loved it. I loved the blank palette of it. So we had kind of many, it's been about 10 years in the making. It's kind of this dream, lifelong dream come true, and it's really special.
And
we
you
love
get
it.
To make people happy. I mean, you know, that's so fun.
People come in, like, it is the whole essence of ice cream to me is that you're making people happy, and especially if we can do it in a way. We use Trickling Springs dairy, which is hormone-free and happy cows. We visited their happy cows. And they are actually really happy.
Good product.
Yes.
Yeah. And we try to use as many local. We're about to do a series of local herbs that we're doing. So we went to different farms, and we have a lemon balm, lemon verbena flavor. We have a wormwood, chocolate mint. So to be able to kind of support the community around us is so, I love it.
That's great. Perfect.
One of the things that it seems like Jenny does a lot of taking the idea of classic pastries and turning them into ice cream flavors. Is there a particular bent that you have?
Yeah. And I'd never thought this was like, you know, when we opened, I never kind of could imagine that this is kind of where we were going. But a lot of what we do is like we take like beautiful fresh ingredients and like then we kind of mess it all up, kind of jumble it all up. So like a perfect example is we have like a Mirabella plum sorbet with orange tang. So like I never thought like I would be putting tang in ice cream.
God, I hate tang.
I can't even believe you said the word tang. I haven't heard anybody say that.
I don't know where that came from.
In the third grade.
But it is. I'm going to bring you some of that.
Wow.
You're gonna like
Wait
it.
A second. Do you wear an astronaut suit when you make that ice cream?
A little bit.
Okay.
Don't tell anyone though.
That was the marketing pitch for Tang back
right.
in the day,
oh, yeah.
right?
Oh yeah.
Wow. Well, the astronauts drank it.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and they hated it too.
Yeah. No, it's pretty vile, but I love this I love it in the flavor.
Well, and I love Mirabella plum, so it surprised me then when you used the word tang. I'm like, whoa.
I'm gonna bring you guys some.
Then it was no. Okay, all right. I trust you.
Yeah. So you take something beautiful from God, and then you spray paint it.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly right.
Throw nails at it. Okay,
you know, and
that's a different bent.
Right. I never thought when we opened. I went to this amazing ice cream shop in Durham, North Carolina, where I kind of learned how to take what I've been doing in my home kitchen to making professional ice cream, and they were the most unbelievably hardcore, like. Days and days and days, like hulling strawberries, and it was all fresh, beautiful produce, and that was my dream too. And then, like, I don't know, it's just like as things go, I see like a giant bag of like Lucky Charm marshmallows, and I'm like, I want to put that in ice cream.
It really is a Baltimore take.
Yeah.
It really is a Baltimore take.
It's you. Yeah. Your ice cream is you. Yeah. That's cool. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's very groovy.
Your personality is
and
in
I
your
get,
ice cream.
I'm very lucky that like, I think the, you know, independently owned businesses, I think one of the biggest challenges that like, how do you manage all the business end of everything and then still get to have fun? And I'm very lucky that my wife loves doing all the business end stuff and lets me play around with ice cream all day.
That's good.
So it's really, we have so much fun together and it's
That's awesome.
It's
good
great.
For you. I'm curious, what does happen to your business in the wintertime? How do you guys get through a time of the year that might not be, you know, big sales?
Definitely slows down. We do our hot chocolate. We make marshmallows.
Oh, good.
But it's definitely slowed down. But one thing that we are just so lucky about is the lights on 34th Street make our December a great month.
That's great.
So January, cool. February are tough. But, you know, we have such I love our staff, and I want to keep them, and I want to make sure that I can pull them through the winter that they can be with us when things are booming.
Good. That's great.
You guys should be doing an ice cream calendar to remind people different times of the year that they have to get in there.
Absolutely. And we do some events in the winter. We have ice cream for breakfast where people come in their pajamas. And
awesome.
Do like a guest chef thing.
Want to do that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's so much fun.
I'll tell
fun.
You what, our producer, Luke, you make sure that he finds out about the ice cream for breakfast and he will show up in his jammies, I'm certain.
See, I recognize Luke. I think he comes in his jammies already. He's got nice ones, though. Classy.
He's
a classy guy.
Classy.
He's a Baltimore Luke. Guy, too, just like the rest of us.
That's awesome. Do you have children?
I have one daughter. And
she must be the luckiest child in the world.
She knows. She is like
she's
the happiest.
You make
brought
sure she
on ice cream.
Yeah, she is so much fun in this world. She just runs. The problem is she's becoming a little bit like a puppy dog with ice cream. So she's super cute and she'll just go up to people and just like stare at them and smile and be like, "Can I have some ice cream?"
Oh, no.
You know, like,
and they can't resist her. I'm sure she's adorable.
She's awesome.
That's wonderful.
So some of the technical questions we have to ask you are: what was your favorite ice cream as a kid?
That's really technical.
I would try different things.
This is an
things.
Ice cream program. This is technical
right.
for an ice cream
technical.
Program.
And you know what? I haven't been asked that question in a very long time, but I would always get different flavors. I never had like one favorite.
Wow. Very democratic.
Yeah, very democratic.
Worst ice cream you ever tasted that you didn't make?
Oh, I was going to give you the one that I made.
I want that one also. And best ice cream you ever tasted that you didn't make?
Oh, boy. Those are great questions. I would say the worst ice cream to me is the giant supermarket, but the big supermarkets where they have those tubs of ice cream and it's like $5 for a giant tub and you're like, I can't believe it. And they just pump so much air into it.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so cheap is because there's very little dairy and it just kind of tastes like fake Cool Whip when you're putting it in your mouth and it doesn't really melt. That's not my favorite. The worst that I ever made, I tried for Super Bowl, a 7-layer dip ice cream. It was
How was the black bean part of it, though?
Oh, my
There
gosh.
Were no black beans.
Okay.
It wasn't quite seven, but however many layers it had, it was an unsuccessful experiment.
See, now David's going to make a black bean ice cream.
You know what?
He might.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
And what was the best ice cream?
And then the best that you didn't make.
That
inspirational.
Yeah.
Like, holy moly, I gotta do this. I gotta beat this.
Yeah, there's a shop in Philadelphia called Little Babies. And we went there right when we were starting. And because they use Trickling Spring and they run an Emery Thompson machine, which is our machine as well. And their ice cream is so delicious and so kind of creative. They have a Earl Grey Sriracha, and so they do some kind of really crazy stuff, and then their staple flavors are also really great, and I've gotten to know them a little bit more, and they're a great company. And also, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention again the Parlor in Durham have just really beautiful, beautiful ice cream.
That's
everything
good to know.
Fresh and delicious.
I'm gonna go there.
Oh, you have
That's
to go
cool.
there.
All right, tell family.
Yeah,
for sure.
So is there a place, is there a meal that ice cream doesn't belong as a part of?
You know, I thought that originally, but now I don't. We've done a couple different events with different restaurants. We did a kale Caesar salad with Caesar salad dressing, with Caesar salad dressing ice cream. And the kale kind of held up to the ice cream, and it was really great. I'm sure there's... No, I don't think so. The more I think about it. You can make... I think we could do ice cream for almost anything.
Yeah, you're a pretty pure vector for ice cream production. I think that's very good.
Yeah, I love ice cream, so it's a bad question for me.
Tell us about your machine, now that you've mentioned it. I'm curious about that.
Sure. It's Emery Thompson. It's a... We had a lot of options, and we looked at a lot of different ones, and in the end, it's a simple, American-made steel. When you call, I don't want to sound like an advertisement for them, but when you call for technical help, you actually get the president, Steve Thompson, his cell number. We've had trouble in the middle of a busy Friday with the machine, and he walks us through it, and I don't know. It's just, it's to me, a company like that deserves all the recognition in the world.
How big is it?
We can pull about 3 gallons out at a time. It takes about 6 minutes per batch.
That's great.
So
wow, that's so different from what we do.
Oh,
yeah,
it's
amazing.
It's so different.
You know, my pastry chef would be so happy.
Send her down.
Yeah, right?
No.
That's great. No. No.
Yeah, we produce ice cream in 3 different places, and... And none of them at that kind of pace. We also don't do the volume of a
right.
shop.
So
yeah,
so.
Yeah. It's a sure. different, sure. you know. And there's such a difference between restaurant ice cream and what we're doing. We're governed by different boards and
sure.
all sorts of different things. So,
mm-hmm.
so well, maybe tell us a little bit about the production process for
sure.
you guys.
Yeah, so we take our dairy. We put it into our machine along with a base. So if we're doing a salty caramel, we make a caramel base in-house. And basically, we freeze it in the machine and comes out looking like soft serve. And then we put it into a blast freezer, which gets it down to minus 30 as quick as possible. And then from the blast, we move it into our walk-in, and it sits at about minus 15 cool. degrees.
So it's kind of a high-quality dairy potion, flavor potion, mix and freeze together.
Right. And then sometimes during the pulling out or extrusion process, there's mix-ins and swirls and all that fun
yeah,
stuff.
That's great.
Cutting stuff in. That's great. Well, thanks so much for coming on the program.
Yeah, it was
hey, this
nice
was
to
great.
Meet you.
This was really fun.
I'm going to have to try the Old Bay caramel. But
I'm going to bring you some.
Man,
I'm going to bring you some.
Man. Now, you brought a couple flavors with you
yeah,
today,
yeah.
right?
Yep, those are for you guys.
Oh, goody. All right.
That's,
here we go.
That sounds like brutal research.
You'll manage. You'll manage. Yeah.
Thanks, David.
Awesome.
Thanks
nice
so
to
much
meet you.
For coming on. And thanks for listening to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And you can follow Chef Cindy Wolf on...
On Twitter, it's Chef Cindy Wolf. And on Instagram, Chef Wolf.
And you can send us emails and questions at foremanwolf@wypr.org. Thanks for listening.